The Fan on Demand. He has traveled the world to bring you the story. Get it first, fast, and unfiltered. Now, this is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, you heard me talk yesterday about the officiating in the Raptors-Nets series, specifically the fourth quarter of the first game where the Nets had one offensive foul called, one foul called in the entire fourth quarter against them. It was an offensive foul with a little more than a minute left. And if you've ever watched the Nets play, I mean, you know that they can't run up and down the court without leaving a body line behind. So, it's one of the things we talked about going into the series. You heard Matt Devlin talk about the playoff whistle. A lot of concern expressed by people around the Raptors about the, shall we say, the level of respect they would get from officials during the game compared to the level of respect the Brooklyn Nets would get due to the presence of players like Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, guys certainly with more of a pedigree. And yes, more of a reputation than some of the guys in the Raptors. So, I mean, I had a little bit of fun with it yesterday. I was telling you that, you know, I think the referees have it in for the Raptors, that I think the NBA would certainly love to see a team from someplace around New York advance to the playoffs. A Brooklyn-Miami final would be pretty good ratings for the NBA. Tim Donaghy. Refereed in the NBA for a long time. And of course, you know, Tim Donaghy eventually spent time in prison as a result of involvement in fixing NBA games. He now runs a terrific website, refpicks.com, which is really interesting. And Tim Donaghy joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Tim, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
I got to ask you, honestly, Tim, does the NBA head office, like, look, referees are human beings. Do these guys go out on the court? Did you ever go out on the court kind of knowing what the NBA head office wanted to happen?
Absolutely. Especially more in the playoff situations, because what they do is they actually send in a representative from the league office to sit down with the referees at an 11 o'clock meeting in the morning and go over game film. And they will show the referees what they want called, what they want them to concentrate on, what they feel needs to be called or let go in a series, to avoid any problems. And with that, you always have a situation where you would leave that room and you would say to yourself, one team is put at an advantage or a disadvantage. And in this situation and the series that I look at and what I said before the series took place was that Brooklyn definitely would be put at an advantage in this situation for a lot of reasons, and mainly some of the reasons that you touched on. A Brooklyn-Miami matchup would bring great ratings, and you know that's what this is all about for the NBA and the league offices, bringing in as many dollars as they possibly can.
Do you think fans underestimate that? Underestimate the influence, and I'll ask you further. We always talk about in the NHL. Boy, the league would love it. I mean, everybody would love to have their two biggest markets playing in every championship game. That would be wonderful for ratings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Does this go on more than fans imagine?
I think it definitely does, and I'm not here to push my book. My book came out in 2009,
right.
But I have a lot of people that say to me, "You know what, Tim? I hated you. I hated what you were involved in and what you did. I read your book, and you know what? I can't believe it, and I actually like you now." And it's a situation where the things that the league does and continues to do to put some of these teams at a disadvantage, like the Toronto Raptors, because moving forward, they're not going to what we call is bring in those big dollars for the league, you know, basically is terrible for the fans of Toronto and the way that, you know, they go and support that team, and they really are going to have trouble moving on based on talent and what takes place on the floor when they're really going against the referees in the league also, along with the Brooklyn Nets.
The book is called Blowing the Whistle, The Culture of Fraud in the NBA. The website is refpicks.com. Tim Donaghy is a former NBA referee. He's also the founder and a handicapper on refpicks.com. So you've been in these meetings. At no point, I've got to think, Tim, does... See, my take from what you're saying is you look at video, and if I'm a referee and I'm looking at video and I've spent 53 minutes of that hour looking at Toronto Raptors players doing stuff and 6 minutes of that hour looking at Brooklyn Nets players doing stuff, I'm going to come away, it's human nature, going to come away thinking, God damn, the Raptors are dirty. You know,
not only that, but, you know, as a referee, you have to also understand as these referees advance from round one to round two to round three, they get paid an enormous amount of money as they advance in rounds. And you're being graded with every game that you officiate. And the league wants you to call certain things, and you're going to be graded based on those things they want you to call. So if they say to you, Kyle Lowry is hand-checking, Deron Williams, and we need that called, you're certainly going to call it because you know you're going to get checked off as a correct when you blow that whistle. Now, if you think that you're going to let something go, you may get dinged with a missed call and your grade may go down based on that. So that's basically how they do it and how they train and program these referees to put one team at an advantage or a disadvantage.
So you got to play the game in order to stay in the game, basically, is what you're telling me, if you're a referee.
Absolutely. And if you're going to continue to want to progress up the ladder and make more money, and as you progress up the ladder, have a higher status to where you're going to be a referee for maybe 30-some years like Joe Crawford and Dick Bavetta, and be very successful, you're going to do what the league wants.
When you sit down and handicap a series or handicap a game, how much of what you do involves knowledge of who's calling that game? Is there a signature, I guess is what I'm trying to say, to how a certain referee will call a certain game?
You know, no doubt about it. Now, when I look at the referees for tonight's game, for example, if we're going to do that, we're going to look at McCutchen, Jones, and Gary Zielinski. If you're putting Gary Zielinski and David Jones in an arena like Sacramento or Portland, a situation where the fans are very boisterous and they come down on you at every call, that home team's definitely going to have a little bit of an advantage because they're what we consider in the referee world kind of like homer referees, mm-hmm. where they don't really want to go against that tough crowd. And this isn't a knock on Toronto and their fans, but they don't have that type of crowd that some of these other arenas have. So if they did, I would say that Toronto would be in good shape tonight, but they really don't have that crowd that comes down on the referees, you know, like they would need to influence them.
Tim, when you see a fourth quarter like Saturday's where, and again, look, I know what Paul Pierce's reputation is. I know what Kevin Garnett's reputation is. These guys have been around. They've earned a certain amount of respect. But when I see the Brooklyn Nets and they go an entire quarter and the only call I'm seeing is an offensive foul at the minute left, I mean, come on. that's beyond the pale.
It's impossible. It's almost basically impossible. And what happens in that situation is the referees start the referee to time and score. And what happens is they start to let the little things go down at the one end, but they start to call them at the other end. And that's what happens in a situation like that. And then all of a sudden it's a tight game and things start falling Brooklyn's way and the game's over.
Tim, it's not as if, I'm not saying that it's always a good thing to have the big markets going to the championship. But I'm saying if I'm a league, I want LeBron James in my signature games. I just do. Is there something to be said for maybe giving that guy benefit of the doubt because he is such a better player? And I guess... The problem you might have, Tim, is when it goes from, okay, I as an official are going to give player X a benefit of the doubt because he's a real good player, to I'm going to give player X's team the benefit of the doubt because they have player X in their team.
Right, and this is going back, you know, it started with Michael Jordan where the referees used to tell the younger referees, if Michael Jordan goes to the hole and there's a big crowd in there, and he misses the shot, just blow the whistle because he had to be fouled, even if you're not sure. And it goes back to that concept of that's what the referees are programmed to, is to give that star player, you know, the benefit of the doubt consistently, and even when he commits a foul, if you can give that foul to somebody else on that team in that area, that's what you're told to do.
What would you do if you're the Raptors tonight?
You know what? You got to go out and you just have to play hard and hope for the best. I mean, I think that they're, like I said before, they're not only going against the Brooklyn Nets, they're going against the league office. I think they have a very talented team. They just have to be that much better than the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, if they shoot the ball well, I do think that they can beat Brooklyn. I have picked Brooklyn to win the series based on, you know, a lot of the factors that we just discussed in Pierce Garnett, Joe Johnson, Jaron Williams, the veteran team, and even Jason Kidd. I think when you look at the coaches, you know, the referees are going to be more apt to talk and respond to Jason Kidd than they are to Dwayne Casey. And that's just the way it is.
Tim, was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
I appreciate you having me. And the name of the book was Personal Foul, not Blowing the Whistle.
Personal Foul.
At the last minute, but I appreciate it.
Personal Foul. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it, Tim.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Take care. That is Tim Donaghy, former NBA referee, founder and handicapper for refpicks.com. Again, it's a terrific, it's great having a referee as a handicapper. And look, and I made this point, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, believe me, I'm not, but I've seen enough sports, and I understand we talked yesterday about strike zones and how every umpire has a different strike zone, and guys who are established pitchers get the benefit of the doubt all the time, and that's fine. But you know what? Greg Maddux never went through, I don't think he went through an inning where he didn't have at least one ball called. You know, Greg Maddux may have gotten the benefit of the doubt in an at-bat against somebody, but I guarantee you that it wasn't always strike one, strike two, strike three, you're gone. Strike one, strike two, strike three, you're gone. Guarantee. That's essentially what happened in the fourth quarter Saturday. Essentially, that was the referee saying, we didn't see anything for a full freaking quarter. We didn't see anything, no fouls. They called an offensive foul at the minute left. We didn't see anything. That is impossible. That is absolutely impossible. Now, there are people who are going to say, well, the NBA is the hardest sport to officiate. You know, with all due respect, I don't know how you judge that. I would think the NHL is faster than the NBA. How is the NBA any harder to officiate than the NHL? Seriously. I think it's pretty clear that the NBA, and I love the way Tim Donaghy explained it. You have a meeting, the league official goes over stuff with you, and it's like anything else. It's human nature. You and I have a meeting, and we're discussing two different people, and I spend 40 minutes of the hour talking about what an ass this one person is. And then I spend 5 minutes talking about the other guy. What are you going to come away thinking? I know what you're going to say, Jeff, what happened the other 15 minutes? You know what I'm getting at. You're going to come away predisposed to viewing an event from a certain perspective. You are going to come away with a bias. And as Tim Donaghy points out, not only do you have a bias, but now you're going out in front of 18,000 people with a bias, knowing that your future employment, knowing that your future shot down the road in the playoffs, your chance to make more money, depends on you being quote-unquote consistent. How are you consistent? Well, you are consistent by living up to what your employers have set out for you as goals. If I've given you this as a plan, this is what I want you to look for tonight. Well, you freaking better well, quote-unquote, look for that tonight. And I honestly believe this happens more than fans know in sports, more than media knows in sports. I truly believe that. So we appreciate Tim Donaghy joining us, and that's great. We'll get everybody worked up. And you heard Tim Donaghy say the guys who are officiating tonight, they're known as homer refs. So get in their ass early. Be all over them. direct your venom at the officials. You've got a guy who's a former official, now a handicapper, telling you that this crew tonight is susceptible to the pressures of a home crowd. I would take that as a call to arms. David Moyes, we're talking about the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. You're pretty much the rest of the world is talking about David Moyes' departure from Manchester United. Barry Glendenning's the deputy sports editor of The Guardian. I have no idea why he's doing this. He has a day off, and he's agreed to come on my show. I'm flattered, but Barry, a day off in the middle of the biggest, maybe the biggest story of the century. I would just go to the bar and turn the cell phone off.
Yeah, well, I had a feeling I might hear from you today, Jeff. You only ever call me when there's big news. You never ring for just a chat or anything.
I never ring to ask how Sunderland's doing.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, that's a story for another day when you've an hour to spare.
is this a surprise in any way?
I don't think it's a surprise that he's been sacked. I think it's possibly a surprise that he's been sacked today. And the manner in which Manchester United went about sacking him is surprising, because they seem to have done it in a very underhand and duplicitous way. There's obviously a leak from a very high level at the club yesterday afternoon. So David Moyes, I believe, found out he was going to be fired by reading about it on the internet, which, however bad a job he has done, and he hasn't done a very good one, is not a very pleasant way to find out you're losing such a high-profile job. And it wasn't confirmed then until this morning here in the UK, which meant he was sort of left over a barrel for 16 hours, not actually knowing what his future was.
Barry Glendenning's the deputy sports editor of The Guardian. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Barry, there are people who will say that this... I mean, obviously, David Moyes was hired at the suggestion, if you want to call it suggestion, of Sir Alex Ferguson. But there are people, and I've gone back and I've done some reading, there are people who say that his very first move when he came in and sort of changed over the backroom staff, especially Mike Phelan and Rennie Muhlenstein, that was, you know, the first sign that perhaps David Moyes wasn't exactly, I mean, he was his own man, I guess, is what I'm saying. And that can be good in some ways, but I'm not certain that that's the way you go about establishing yourself as being your own man when you look at a team that's just won a league championship and you've come in and basically said, well, I'm going to bring the guys from my little club over here that's never really won squat, and I'm going to replace all these guys that you have.
Yeah, that was a strange decision, but I presume he wanted to stamp his mark and not have any of the old ghosts hanging around looking over his shoulder. It was probably a mistake with hindsight, but I'd imagine at the time he thought he was doing the right thing. I mean, I think the very first thing that suggested he was in over his head was that he described when he was summoned to Alex Ferguson's house and told he was going to be the next Everton manager. He said that all the blood drained from my face, and he was embarrassed that he was wearing jeans, which, you know, he was clearly quite shocked, and that suggested he was afraid to be taking on this huge responsibility. So to then go into the club and get rid of everyone who knew how things operated, and it did seem rather odd, but I presume he thought he knew what he was doing at the time and had faith in the backroom staff who'd served him quite well at Everton.
You know, a skeptic, Barry, would look at this and say that a couple of things. One of them, Sir Alex Ferguson knew that it was time to step back because he took a look at this team, knew that they were getting up there in years, especially and knew he had a lot of issues in the midfield and in the back line. And essentially that David Moyes was almost set up for failure here, because this team, as much money as Manchester United has and as much of a reputation they have and as much as they have a pedigree, just was not a very good team in terms of the level of talent.
Well, Jeff, I heard some of your discussion about basketball referees, so I know you're not a skeptical or cynical man. I think you just have to be a realist to know that this team was aging, getting on in years. But they did win the league last year by 12 points. So, and it's much the same players with a couple of additions. And so for them to have declined so much is probably remarkable. I don't think anyone was particularly expecting David Moyes to challenge for the title this season, but they were probably expecting him to possibly win one of the cups and definitely qualify for next season's Champions League. He's not going to win anything, or the team he's been in charge of isn't going to win anything, and they're not going to qualify for the Champions League. So, you know, he's fallen down in every department and failed to meet all his targets. I mean, some of the stats are remarkable. The United have scored 56 goals in the league this season compared to 86 this time last season. They've lost home and away against Liverpool and Everton for the first time ever in a season. They're going to get their lowest tally of points in the Premier League era. They've lost to Newcastle for the first time since 1972. The record against the six sides above them in the league is one win in 12. I could go on and on and on. But his record is awful. But I do think, Jeff, that it's very unfair that he should be shouldering all the blame, because the Glazers, who own the club, have to take some responsibility. They've mortgaged it up to the yin-yang and are taking hundreds of millions out of it. The players have, almost to a man, with one or two exceptions, David De Gea, the goalkeeper, being one of them, have underperformed and not been very supportive of the manager. So, you know, I feel for the bloke, but he hasn't cut the mustard.
Barry, where does Man U go from here? You know, you hear the sort of the trendy names, the Jurgen Klopps, the Diego Simeone, you know, Louis van Gaal. Other people are saying, well, you sort of bring a caretaker in, and essentially I think what they're saying is you wait until Jose Mourinho gets bored at Chelsea and comes there. What do you think Man U does here?
It's difficult to know. I mean, Ryan Giggs has been placed in charge for the time being, and he has four games against Norwich City, my own Sunderland, Hull City and Southampton. And, you know, they're all winnable games. But even if they do win all those games, it will be a massive, massive risk to put a man with no management experience in charge of the club. I mean, I do know that Ryan Giggs is studying for his UEFA Pro licence, which is the qualification you need to manage in the Premier League. And I would say in time he will be a very good manager and definitely someday will manage Manchester United. But I think now is too soon for him. It'll be too much of a gamble. Louis van Gaal has been talked about. He's currently the manager of the Netherlands, but he won't be available till after the World Cup, by which time it might be a bit too late in terms of buying in players, because Manchester United, they need a lot of new players. They need an entire defensive line. They need midfielders. They really do need to spend money. Jurgen Klopp has, I believe, said he doesn't want the job. He's happy where he is at Borussia Dortmund. I would think, should Jose Mourinho make it known to Manchester United that he would be interested in taking the job, I'd say they would probably make strides to give it to him, because he has pedigree, obviously. He's won a lot of trophies. I don't think he's particularly happy at Chelsea at the moment. And Manchester United could have given him the job when Alex Ferguson retired, but decided against it on the grounds that they didn't think he had the right attitude to manage Manchester United. But, you know, he gets in as many touchline spats and arguments with journalists and has embarks on the same bully boy crusades as Ferguson did. So they're not that dissimilar.
Barry, it was good of you to do this. I want you to go and enjoy your off day right now.
I might go and have a drink, Jeff. Thanks. I'll send you the bill.
Absolutely. Go have a drink or 10. Take care.
Bye.
It's Barry Glendening. He's a deputy sports editor of The Guardian. He's part of the Guardians football podcast, by the way, with James Richards. You got to check that out. Seriously, it was like the funniest 45 minutes in sports radio. It's very good. And we appreciate him joining us. So David Moyes, fired by Manchester United. Ryan Giggs will take his place for the remaining four matches. And then We'll see where Manchester United goes from there. They've got like £200 million to spend in the transfer market. The problem with that is they're spending it in the transfer market during a World Cup season. And typically, teams overpay for players during the transfer period during a World Cup season. It just is. It always happens. The market's a harder market to read. You're getting a player who's, you know, coming off his club season, and if he's any good, has been playing for his country internationally, and in Brazil, he's going to be playing in 190 degree temperatures. And guys, it's honest to God, it's not a good off season. It's not a good off season to be looking to spend $200 million if you're the a manager of a team. It just isn't. It's a tricky proposition going after players during a World Cup summer. But we appreciate Barry Glendening joining us anyhow, especially in his off day. And I'm sure Barry will go down to one of Brixton's fine drinking establishments and celebrate the departure of David Moyes. Wow, still mulling over some of the stuff Tim Donaghy said. It's almost enough to make you stop watching the NBA. But the Raptors and Nets series will continue. And we here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, well, we're such big Raptors fans. We will have Game 4, by the way, right here. It'll be a great doubleheader day. I'll have Jays Red Sox, then Nets Raptors. We'll have Game 4 of that series. We're also giving away a trip for two to New Jack City to watch the Raptors play the Nets. Well, specifically Brooklyn. The trip includes round-trip flights from the Toronto Island Airport to New York from Porter Airlines. And again, you know how I feel about Porter Airlines. Flying refined. It's just it's the best. I go out of my way to fly Porter. And I'm not just blowing smoke here. They know that. I go out of my way to fly Porter. So you got round-trip flights to New York from Porter Airlines. You got two nights hotel accommodation in downtown Brooklyn at the Aloft, New York, Brooklyn, which is a very cool hotel. It's hipster central. Seriously. You'll be so hip. You know, you'll be so hip when you come back from that trip, your friends won't even know you. They won't know you. And you get two tickets to see the Raps and the Nets on Sunday, April 27th. I don't know why you wouldn't be lining up right now to call in. Except I'll tell you when to call in. Frankly, right now is not the time. So again, round-trip flights, Toronto Island Airport to New York from Porter Airlines. Two nights hotel accommodation in Brooklyn at the Aloft, New York, Brooklyn. You're going to be so cool. And two tickets to see the Raptors versus the Nets. Like, you don't know how cool you're going to be staying at the Aloft. Your hipster quotient will just go through the roof. We will have a qualifier. Tim and Sid will have a qualifier later on as well today. So, again, the prize, round-trip flights, Toronto Island Airport to New York. Two nights hotel accommodation in Brooklyn at the Aloft, Brooklyn. Two tickets to see the Raptors and the Nets in the fourth game of that NBA series. You know what? Why don't we do that now? Let's take the seventh caller through. Kyle Lowry's number. Seventh caller through, 416-870-0590. Star 591, 888-666-0590. Seventh caller through qualifies to win. Round-trip flights to New York. Two nights accommodation at the Aloft, New York, Brooklyn. Two tickets to see your Raptors play the Nets in Game 4 on Sunday. Brady and Walker are going to announce the winner of the trip for two on Friday morning. And we're going to continue to focus on basketball. Jeff Zilgut, the national basketball writer for USA Today, will join us. We'll see if Jeff is buying into what Tim Donaghy is selling about the referees in tonight's game. Back with more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I don't know why this song always reminds me of 70s game shows or something like that. Anyhow. Congratulations to Daniel Keatings in Schaumburg. you have qualified to be the coolest person you know. You have qualified for a chance to win round-trip flights from Toronto Island Airport, Billy Bishop Airport, sorry, to New York from Porter Airlines. And what you're going to do is you're going to get there early. You're going to have the free nuts. You're going to enjoy the lounge. Porter Airlines is so good. You're going to get in the plane. You're going to have a beer. It's just, I might go with you. Seriously. If you win, I may go along with you. Round-trip flight from the downtown airport to New York from Porter Airlines. Flying refined, and indeed it is. Two nights hotel accommodation in downtown Brooklyn at the A-Loft, New York, Brooklyn. Two tickets to see the Raps and the Nets play. You're going to be such a hipster if you win this. Daniel Keatings, if you win this, you are going to be the hippest guy around. You don't even know how hip you're going to be. And Brady and Walker will announce the winner on Friday morning. Tim and Sid will have your next chance to qualify this afternoon. Well, I don't even know, frankly, why are we playing this series now? We had Tim Donaghy on. He made it pretty clear that the referees will have been instructed by the NBA to err on the side of the Brooklyn Nets tonight and throughout this series, which if you watch the fourth quarter of that game on Saturday, you'd swear to God they've already started doing that. Jeff Zilgits, the national basketball writer for USA Today, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So I don't know if you heard our interview with Tim Donaghy, Jeff, but he basically, there's a lot of conspiracy theorists, and you're gonna have to forgive us. We don't do the NBA playoffs in this city very often, but
okay.
A lot of people saw that fourth quarter Saturday, and Jeff, you've covered enough basketball to know there is no conceivable way in hell that the Brooklyn Nets play a quarter of basketball without doing something that deserves a foul. I mean, it just does not happen.
Yeah.
What's your take on this whole thing?
Yeah, so here's what I'm going to say about this. A couple things, Jeff, and let's just take the fourth quarter. I think the difference in what you're just going to see tonight is that you're going to see a far more aggressive Raptors team in the fourth quarter. I thought they lacked some of that anyway. And I think even Dwayne Casey agrees with some of that in terms of, you know, setting screens a little bit more aggressively, fighting through screens a little bit more aggressively, double teaming Brooklyn's guards a little bit more aggressively. But, you know, I'm not a huge guy on the conspiracy theories, Jeff, but let me address this. So let's just say that you do believe that there's some kind of conspiracy. I'm going to take a slightly different tact.
All right.
That truly, if the NBA really wanted that, wouldn't they want Toronto to win this? Because let's look at this. Brooklyn's already got their thing going, right? I mean, they sell merchandise. They have that brand. If we go back a year, what did the NBA do? They encouraged Tim Lewicki, who was with the Lakers and AEG, to come take this job. Let's put Toronto on the map in the NBA. So if the NBA truly is into that kind of thing, which I don't believe they are, you would think that they want the Toronto market to succeed so that people are buying more Raptors gear. So that's the next brand that the NBA is selling on a global basis is the Raptors brand rather than Brooklyn, because they've already established their situation. I mean, that's a slightly different take on it, Jeff. I know that people here are upset about the way the fourth quarter went down in terms of fouls. I necessarily don't believe it's a conspiracy. I also do believe, and, you know, it's hard to read into the subconscious mind and stuff like that, but I think there's a lot of things that happen subconsciously with officials in terms of, you know, okay, we're looking at one team, the Brooklyn Nets, who have this playoff experience. You know, they must be doing something right on the floor. Toronto, with none of this playoff experience, must be doing something wrong on the floor. And I think it boils down to that maybe more than anything.
You know, here's the thing, though, Jeff. I mean, it's sort of taking the other approach in the conspiracy angle here. You know, I would think the NBA would love to have a New York area team in the Eastern Final against, a Brooklyn-Miami Eastern Final would do, the ratings would be through the roof compared to Toronto-Brooklyn, or Toronto-Miami. But beyond that,
I do understand that.
Yeah, but beyond that, you know, here's my thing. I will, and I understand that players with a pedigree and players with a you know, a track record with a reputation. A team full of players like that is probably, as you said, it's human nature. They're probably going to get the benefit of the doubt from the officials a lot of time, because the officials are going to sit there and go, look, these guys have been through the wars. They know what's going on. But I guess my concern is the Raptors are a better team than the Nets this year. They were for months a better team than the Nets this year. Where's the respect that the Atlantic Division champion should be getting compared to the respect that a bunch of old guys who went in the tank down the stretch to get a favorable playoff position? Like, why would a referee give them more respect over the Raptors? To me, the Raptors are much more worthy of the respect of a referee than the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, and Jeff, I do agree with that point. And you know, without having a great answer here on this one, is that I simply think it goes back to what we're talking about. That portion of it doesn't register as much. The idea that the Raptors are the better team, have earned this spot, the third seed with 48 victories, that doesn't resonate as much with the idea that Paul Pierce has played in 137 playoff games, Garnett's played in a ton, Jason Kidd has played in a ton. But let me also say this, Jeff. I think this is part of the Raptors learning about playoff basketball and knowing that they saw it, okay? They got an idea of, hey, we didn't get the calls they did. They're going to go out there, and they're going to do it in a couple different ways tonight, I believe. I think they're going to be far more aggressive going to the basket. They're going to be far more aggressive setting their screens. And, you know, we can tiptoe the line on flops, but I think the Raptors are also going to sell their fouls a little bit better. And in general, Jeff, I don't have a problem with that. I the flopping got out of control. But if you're hit, legitimately hit going to the bucket, I have no problem embellishing a little bit to sell it. If you're not getting hit and you're faking it, I think you're doing a disservice to your team at times. But I think we'll see a little bit of reversal of that. And let me also say this. That crew in general on Saturday did not have a great game.
Yeah, Ed Malloy's not the guy you want to see coming into your arena.
An interesting thing, Jeff, and I'm going to have to double-check on some of the referee assignments. Now, they won't get that same crew tonight, but I am under the understanding that the crews this year, they'll be the same three-man crew working the playoffs together. They won't work the same series every time. So there's a new crew in here tonight. But you may see, whether it's later in this round against the Nets or in the next round, that you may see that same crew here again.
Jeff Zilgut is USA Today's national basketball writer. You've known Masai Ujiri for a while. I got to ask you, how surprised were you when you heard Masai drop an F-bomb publicly? Everybody tells me that no one should ever be surprised when Masai Ujiri drops an F-bomb privately. But that, how surprised were you at both of what Masai said and his reaction, and the reaction to it?
Yeah, well first of all, I don't have a huge problem with it. I don't know if I was surprised in the sense that, you don't see general managers out there doing that. That's where the surprise comes from. Am I going to see Ernie Grunfeld at the Wizards game on Friday night at a fan rally before the game doing that? No. Would Sam Presti be doing that in Oklahoma City? No. But I love the fact that Masai did it. And also, let's look at it this way. I think Tim Lewicki, as I think he had said, he doesn't want his GM doing that all the time, but he has great admiration for Masai standing up for his players and the organization. And ultimately, I have no problem with it. I think he sort of turned into a folk hero here in Toronto with that, Jeff. I mean, fans really rallied around the idea that, Masai is going to go to bat for his team. He's going to be just as emotionally invested in the success of this team. It's just not a business. And, so he is living and dying just like the fans are with every possession and every shot down the stretch. And I think that truly resonates with the basketball community here.
Jeff, what's the sense around the NBA of the job that Dwayne Casey did here? Because, obviously Dwayne doesn't have a contract for next year. It's the one thing we really, Masai has been pretty clear. I should say Tim Lewicki's been pretty clear. He wants Kyle Lowry back. We've had that sense. I don't know if it's going to happen, but we've had that sense. But there's this, nobody has really come out and said, hey, Dwayne Casey's our guy. What is the view around the NBA of the job that Dwayne Casey's done here?
Yeah, I think, first of all, let's just go back to when he got the job. There were lots of people around the league very happy that Dwayne Casey was getting a shot. And the tough thing in with these guys is when coaches are fired, by and large, Jeff, they're taking over a team that generally wasn't very good. You know, you're not going to take, you know, no one's getting Eric Spoelstra's job, you know, after last season, mm-hmm. kind of deal. And so I think the impression is that Dwayne did a fantastic job instilling the principles that he has learned through an assistant coach over the years, and this is a brief time as a head coach, and now here he is. He had a chance to work with a young team. It took a little bit of time, but to get this team to 48 wins, and Jeff, I think the news just came out today. He wasn't going to win Coach of the Year, and I know he was going to get some votes. I think he finished fifth mm-hmm. in the Coach of the Year voting today that was released. And so let me say this. I believe, and again, I think the sides have said, let's put the topic aside until after the season. Let's you know, sit down and evaluate what you did. And I ultimately believe that Dwayne's going to be rewarded with the way this happens is probably a 2-year extension. It does not make him a lame duck coach next season if he gets the 2-year deal. It gives him time to continue to work and grow. It's obvious that you know he's had a connection with these young guys, and even more importantly, when a new GM comes in, you know, the idea is that he wants his own guy in, and we see that around the league often. I also believe that Masai and Dwayne have been able to find a lot of common ground in the way both sides operate, and I don't think, you know, that there's any kind of divide between those two, and I'd go to say that there's the opposite, that there's quite a bridge between the two and exchanging of ideas and thoughts and the way they operate. I foresee Dwayne being back here next season.
Jeff, was good of you to do this. Thanks so much.
No problem, Jeff. I'll talk to you again.
Take care. That is Jeff Zilgut. He is the national basketball writer with USA Today, and he's in town for the Nets-Raptors series. Game 2 is tonight. Don't forget, we will have Game 4 from Brooklyn on Sunday. And keep listening all day. We're giving you a chance. It's a great trip. We're giving you a chance, you and a friend slash loved one slash compatriot slash significant other, a chance to fly to New York on Porter to see the Raps and the Nets. We'll be taking qualifiers throughout the week. Brady and Walker will announce the grand prize winner on Friday. And you want to stay tuned for that. That's it for the Blair Show. We're going to put our Baseball Central hat on. Kevin Barker will join me. Mike Wilner will be along as well. We'll get you set for tonight's Orioles-Jays game. R.A. Dickey on the mound against Miguel Gonzalez. Scott Miller, the national baseball writer with Bleacher Report, will also join us. We'll talk about yesterday's big game, Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper and Mark Trout. The first time that Mike Trout and Bryce Harper have met in a game. It was a pretty big deal. Neither of them ended up really having a role, and it came down to Albert Pujols doing a lot of the damage. We'll talk to Scott Miller about that. Baseball Central's next, everybody.